Oh, good evening. We're here from far and near tonight. This is wonderful. Let's do introductions around.
You too.
Wendy.
Dan.
Lisa.
Diana.
Britt.
Carolyn.
Jane.
Jen. Lauren.
Julie.
Okay. Diana's all the way down from Washington again. Yay. Lisan, have you been here before?
No, it's my first time.
Welcome.
Thank you.
How did you hear about us?
I live with you too. She's my roommate.
So.
Where's where I go.
Cool. Now we know. Well, part of the family. Nice. Well, as Ritu may have told you, we're reading this book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, sort of the original American Zen book. And we're on page 102.
Perfect existence through the imperfect existence. The basic teaching of Buddhism is the teaching of transiency, or change. That everything changes is the basic truth for each existence. No one can deny this truth, and all the teaching of Buddhism is condensed within it. This is the teaching for all of us. Wherever we go, this teaching is true. This teaching is also understood as a teaching of selflessness. Because each existence is in constant change, there is no abiding self. In fact, the self-nature of each existence is nothing but change itself, the self-nature of all existence. There is no special, separate self-nature for each existence. This is also called the teaching of nirvana. When we realize the everlasting truth of everything changes, we find our composure in it. We find ourselves in nirvana.
Without accepting the fact that everything changes, we cannot find perfect composure. But unfortunately, although it is true, it is difficult for us to accept it. Because we cannot accept the truth of transiency, we suffer. So the cause of suffering is our non-acceptance of this truth. The teaching of the cause of suffering and the teaching that everything changes are thus two sides of one coin. But subjectively, transiency is the cause of our suffering. Objectively, this teaching is simply the basic truth that everything changes. Dogen Zenji said, "Teaching which does not sound as if it is forcing something on you is not true teaching. The teaching itself is true, and in itself does not force anything upon us, but because of our human tendency, we receive the teaching as if something was being forced on us. But whether we feel good or bad about it, this truth exists. If nothing exists, this truth does not exist. Buddhism exists because of each particular existence."
We should find perfect existence through imperfect existence. We should find perfection in imperfection. For us, complete perfection is not different from imperfection. The eternal exists because of non-eternal existence. In Buddhism, there is a heretical view to expect something outside this world. We do not seek something besides ourselves. We should find the truth in this world. Through our difficulties, through our this is the basic truth of Buddhism. Pleasure is not different from difficulty. Good is not from bad. Bad is good, good is bad. They are two sides of one coin. So enlightenment should be in practice. this is the right understanding of practice and the right understanding of our life. So to find pleasure to suffering is the only way to accept the truth of transiency. Without realizing how to accept this truth, one cannot live in this world. Even though you can try to escape from it, your efforts will be in vain. If you think there's some other way to accept the eternal truth, that everything changes, that's your delusion. This is the basic teaching of how to live in this world. Whatever you may feel about it, you have to accept it. You have to make this kind of effort.
So, until we become strong enough to accept difficulty as pleasure, we have to continue this effort. Actually, if you become honest enough or straightforward enough, it will not be so difficult to accept this truth. You can change your way of thinking a little bit. It is difficult, but this difficulty will not always be the same. Sometimes it will be difficult, and sometimes it will not be so difficult. If you are suffering, you will have some pleasure in the teaching that everything changes. When you are in trouble, it is quite easy to accept the teaching. So why not accept it at other times? It is the same thing. Sometimes you may laugh at yourself, discovering how selfish you are. But no matter how you feel about this teaching, it is very important for you to change your way of thinking and accept the truth of transience.
Nope, that's the end. This is probably the hardest one. It's so easy to think and so easy to except on an intellectual level, of course everything changes. We know the sun comes up, the sun travels across the sky, the whole day is different every moment. We experience the changes of the day, of the seasons, of our lives. But then if something a little untoward happens that goes against our own particular way, we begin to be uneasy and to feel very unhappy. Things shouldn't be like that. Why did it be like that? I don't want it to be that way. And of course it's the same thing. It's the same as the sun traveling across the sky and the seasons changing. The seasons of our life, over which we have very little control, actually, pass through just the same. And sometimes they're fortuitous, and then often we take credit for it. Oh, I did such a great job. This all worked out so well. Good for me. And then if they go badly, often we say, oh, I did such a bad job. Oh, this is terrible. I'm such a bad person. I'm no good at my job. When actually that too is just like the sun crossing the sky and the weather coming and going. Things come and they go. There's a big danger in all of this teaching, as obviously it can become very very tangled up with ourself. It can become a kind of hippie zen, is what I'm trying to say, to think that bad is good and good is bad. It can turn into a kind of masochistic and sadistic kind of way of being in the world. Oh, bad is good, okay, now hit me again. Or good is bad. So every fine thing that happens is somehow has a cloud on it. You know, people have different ways of taking whatever happens and coloring it with whatever judgment they have. Good and bad all by itself is a terrible entanglement. So I would say, instead of saying good is bad and bad is good, I would say forget about good and bad. and experience what's happening completely and thoroughly without labeling it. We don't know. There are many people who've had life-threatening events that anybody would think was terrible and are grateful for. And people in Bhutan are emphasizing the happiness quotient. They aren't worried about good or bad. They're just worried that wanting everyone to be happy. They've created a culture where such a thing is actually possible because they're not, it's based on not judging others. There's not very much poverty in Bhutan. There's not very much great wealth either. How we bring ourselves into what happens, how we enact ourselves and direct our minds as what happens, all depends on the state of our mind, whether we can be crushed by circumstances or relatively happy. The imperfection and perfection is an especially Japanese aesthetic. And I've always enjoyed Japanese flower arranging because it's always not exactly off-center. In fact, one kind of it, you line everything up in a row. All the stems go in a row, but the actual blossoms go off in different directions. So it all comes from one place and then opens up into a kind of display. If there's a leaf that an insect has chewed on, it's considered to be an advantage to the arrangement. The search is not for perfect flowers and perfect leaves, but for a whole feeling of the poignance and the difficulty and complication of life, all as it is, with its rocky places and its beautiful places and everything in between. We know things come and go. We know they're transient. In the Ikebana schools, they save all the flowers after they've died in their arrangement, and at the end of the year, they have a funeral for them. Really recognizing in our own life, it's very hard to see the transiency. We can see it in our photograph albums and our family photograph albums because we can find photographs of ourselves with, you know, our little legs sticking up in the air as babies. But it's very hard to connect that baby to anything that we know about ourselves. We don't even remember being a baby, usually. And we pass through so many different systems of life. And each one is bewildering as we enter it. We probably all remember the bewilderment of adolescence. when you have a young, vigorous body and you think you know who you are, and suddenly everything is changing and you really don't know anymore what this is or what it's supposed to be or what to do with it. It's very strange. And all through life we have that. When we're young, we're usually slender as a trout. And then as we get older, that changes too. And all the things about aging, just finding that very first gray hair, I'm amazed. My children all have gray hair. I can't believe it. It doesn't really make sense. It doesn't add up. And yet, there it is. Here we are. The other thing about change is that we can say, oh, well, it's going to get better. It always changes. But at a certain point, it doesn't get better. In fact, as you get very old, all you know is it's bound to get worse. There isn't any more better as far as the physical body is concerned. That's very mysterious. That's plumb weird. It doesn't add up because it's never been like that. And yet, here we are. It's what happens. So the question about the self is a very big question in terms of this. Who is this? What is it? If I'm not that baby, if this thing isn't going to last, if things aren't going to get better, where is it going? So every great teaching has in it the question of who am I? Sort of the very first koan. Who am I? What is this? How can I understand this beingness that is so mysterious? And Buddha would say further, how can I live without clinging to my ideas about this? How can I free myself of the weight of the self idea and allow it to be transient? Allow the change to be the change that it is. Our suffering comes when we say, it shouldn't be like this. In the face of whatever like this is. And practice, on the cushion and off, is to be like this. To face it. It doesn't mean that we don't try to save our skin, or to live as long as we possibly can, but to be very aware of what our situation is. Because once we know for ourselves, we know for others as well. And once we really know for others, we can feel for others. I remember the first time I really got it about death. I was sitting in a large group of people and it was some kind of entertainment. I can't remember what. And I looked around, and there were probably about 50 people. And I thought, you know, in about 80 years, all these people will be dead. Every one of us will be gone. Wow. Amazing. And nobody will remember us either much. Alas, we would all like to be remembered, but if you feel your way into the questions, you can feel the wisdom that's in them also. Really asking what this is, who this is. So that's what Suzuki Roshi is pointing to. These big questions. Teaching which does not sound as if it is forcing something on you is not true teaching. I don't remember Dogen ever saying that. That's such a strange thing. It doesn't sound like Dogen at all. But it's a very interesting effort to say that thing about... it happens to me often when I'm reading and something is said that is difficult to take. It's a kind of wrenching feeling of, ooh, yes, that's true, ooh. It's a hard truth, we say in English. There are some hard truths, which, if we really take them in or recognize them, are refreshing at the same time. Strangely refreshing and strangely freeing. It's why we study, I think. Why we read things like this book or discuss the truth with a capital T. So what do you think? Ken?
Without living in the duality of good and bad, and all the other things that have both, you know, both sides of the coin, would there be anything that was hard? Would there be anything that was easy?
Well, hard and easy is another one of those dichotomies. Our mind works that way with two sides of everything. We're always assuming there are two sides, hard and easy, up and down, good and bad, etc. And it's an important way that we find our way through the world, of course. But if we actually believe that there's a reality to those words, then we lose the flavor and the juice of life entirely.
And doesn't it keep us stuck in the duality?
It does. It does. So flexible mind being, you know, of course we have to make distinctions, but be willing, completely willing to give them up or to change and to modify and to move into and through things as they happen and accept them for what they are first before we then decide what to do about them. Yeah. It is tricky sometimes, but it's even trickier to say, hold on to one truth for dear life, no matter what happens, and say, I know this is true, even though everything is contradicting it completely.
Yeah, truth for who?
Yes. Yeah. Dan?
Lately I've been experiencing not only transiency, but what the statisticians call variance, large variance. And the idea being is that I can sense that things are changing, but my thinking lately on something I've been experiencing, suffering, because I know that things can be significantly different than they are, not just a little different than they are. And if it were just a little different, then maybe I wouldn't even have noticed the situation that I'm in, that I want it to be different. But if things are really bad and you know they can be much better, then when you're really bad, you're looking, oh, I know it could be over there. And that creates a yearning.
Yes.
That I wish it were that way.
Yes.
And if it were only a little bit further away, if it were only a little different, if the soup were a little hotter, but you know, that would make it taste better, but you know, it's just a little bit cooler than I like it, no big deal. But if somebody serves you soup it's not supposed to be cold, it's supposed to be hot, and they serve it to you like one notch over lukewarm, you're going to notice that and say, I wish it were hot. And that, I can see, I can personally experience the gap, and that's frustrating to me.
You can see the perfection that you're longing for at the same time that you're especially noticing how far you are from it. Yeah.
And if I hadn't experienced the other better state, in my opinion, then I wouldn't be longing for it. Which is why maybe I just realized something. Maybe that's why little kids have an easy time being in the moment. They don't know it could be any other way.
Yeah, probably.
Little kids just go with the flow. They don't know what it could be. So they're just there.
Well, their needs are met also. If they're nice middle-class kids, then their needs are met. They don't have to meet them themselves. That's the difference between adulthood and childhood. Adults have to provide their own needs. That's much more of a challenge. Buddha said, one of his last advices for his disciples was to be satisfied with little. And they've done so many studies on happiness now, so many, and they all show that having more doesn't make people happy. That there's a certain, between 0 and or 1 and 10, most people are at 7. No matter where they are in their education, in their economics, anything, everybody is at about a 7, plus minus. It's kind of nice to think of that.
That's really not bad. Yeah. If everybody's at 7, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Yeah. It's not perfect, but it's
I would have
fine.
Thought it'd be a lot lower.
Apparently not.
You're satisfied with that.
Yeah. We're happier than you thought.
Yes. I think that's true, actually. I think we are happier than we think we are. And that's one of our problems. That's how perverse we are as human beings. That we have a default position that's negative. If something happens, then we tend to go to the minus side and have an opinion about it. You know, usually a kind of opinion. Even though we're perfectly fine. And we know we are. So.
I think I read that same study and one of the commentators said, well, it's just what you're pointing to, that it's because these people were surprised too that so many people around the world thought they were happy. But it's because when you put the question directly to people, people kind of go, oh, you know, sort of.
Yes.
It's an analysis or a comment. These
yes.
Researchers were surprised because we do think we're unhappy until, oh.
Because it brings us back to the moment.
Yeah.
And in the moment, where are we? We're right here and everything is just fine. It just is. And even, I think, from what I've read, in pretty difficult situations, people still say they're fine. Even, you know, under bombardment and in great poverty, when people are trying to keep it all together, still they have the intention to live, or life has its intention to live through them. And as far as most people can see and feel, where they are is an okay place to be. It's strange. I always think in our case we're in a super okay place to be, and that it's hard to realize that also. That even when we're extremely privileged, we don't feel any more happy or privileged than anybody else. It's very strange, because we have so much and so many potentialities and possibilities, and exercise very few of them, really. It's mysterious. So much could be done with all of this, but how to generate that in human being, I think we don't quite know. Well, it's 8 o'clock.